are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Friday, everybody. Here's to a fantastic weekend. Hopefully you had a great week so far. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes exactly like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. That's builtbar.com. Promo code LOCKEDON. $10 off your first order of Built Bars. Today, we're continuing our network-wide series that we started earlier this week. Franchise What Ifs. Earlier, the first episode of the week, we talked about some of the mid-90s What Ifs. What if the Wolves don't draft Kevin Garnett? What if they don't trade Ray Allen on draft night for Steph Marbury? What if the illegal Joe Smith contract doesn't happen? And then in our second episode of the week, we had Jerry Zagoda on the show, former Timberwolves beat writer for the Star Tribune. We talked about a variety of different topics, kind of went through his entire tenure as a Wolves beat reporter. Today, we're going to go back one more time, a little bit back in time. We covered kind of all eras with Jerry, actually really everything except for the Garnett era, just mostly because that's the one part of Wolves history. He wasn't on the beat until now. So we're going to take another half step backwards and talk Garnett era. And then next week, we're going to spend most of that week talking David Kahn era and forward what ifs, because there are so many there for sure. But there's still a couple more from the Garnett era that we haven't touched on yet. Before we get to that, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnTWolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right. And actually, before we jump into the what ifs, I feel like we need to talk about the NBA ranking over at ESPN. They ranked the top 74 players of all time and released them earlier this week. And not surprisingly, there's only one Timberwolves player on it. I should mention George Mikan was on there right around 34, I think. Yeah, 34. George Mikan, of course, played for the Minneapolis Lakers and won tons and tons of championships. I think 6 championships in Minneapolis. And then, of course, the franchise moved to LA, became the LA Lakers. And there is a George Mikan statue right in front of the box office inside Target Center, kind of in the lobby area of the main entrance. George Mikan technically never played for the Timberwolves franchise, which didn't exist until 1989. So there's a Minneapolis connection there. And it also hurts every time the Lakers choose to wear a Minneapolis Lakers jersey. But at any rate, the only Timberwolves player on this list, of course, is Kevin Garnett. He was all the way up at, and I was a little surprised they actually had him this high, although I think it was correct. They had him up at number 20 on the list. So that was one spot ahead of Scottie Pippen, 2 spots ahead of Charles Barkley, 3 ahead of David Robinson. Some of the current era or more modern era players who were just behind him, Kawhi Leonard at 25, so that could still rise, obviously. Dwayne Wade at 26. Giannis is already at 27, which feels a little bit high. I mean, 2 years ago, he wouldn't have been on this list at all, most likely. John Stockton, 28. Allen Iverson, 29. Steve Nash, 30. So a lot of more modern era guys just behind him. Right in front of Garnett on the ranking, Dirk Nowitzki was number 19. Moses Malone, number 18. Karl Malone, 17. And then Jerry West, 16, Julius Erving, 15. And then from there, it's really hard to argue with the rest of this list. Some other modern era guys that are in that same neighborhood, Kevin Durant is 14th. Steph Curry is 13th. Kind of funny they put those guys back to back. Those are the only current players that are, you know, in this range on the list. It's very hard to argue with the top 10. If you go to ESPN and check it out, the only player I think that's in the top 10 that I wouldn't put in my top 10 is Kobe Bryant. Obviously, there's the parallels to Michael Jordan and the untimely passing of Kobe just a couple of months ago. I don't think he's a top 10 player all time. I think Garnett is top 20. I also would not put Dirk one slot ahead of Garnett. I think you could argue Garnett's defense. You know, for instance, if Dirk had not, I think the way I described it when I was writing about this at Dunking with Wolves was he dragged the 2011 or the Mavericks to the 2011 title. If Dirk doesn't drag that team to the title in 2011, there's no chance he's ranked ahead of Kevin Garnett. And he was better offensively in terms of efficiency, but Garnett did more offensively and had a far greater impact on the game on defense. So it's not crazy to put Dirk ahead of Garnett, but I wouldn't do it. I think on my list, I'd probably have Garnett 18, maybe 17 at best. I've casually referred to him on this podcast as a top 20 player all time, and ESPN had him right there at 20. CBS Sports also released a list earlier this week. It was just a top 15, and Garnett was not in the top 15. I think the consensus is he's somewhere in that 20 to 25 range, and perhaps my Timberwolves bias would make him a couple slots higher, but I think you can make a sound argument for putting him ahead of Dirk, and you could argue to put him ahead of, you could make an argument ahead of Moses Malone, probably not Karl Malone, but I think I'd probably have Kobe in the same neighborhood as Garnett. Frankly, I think a lot of the guys that are between 10 and 20, I would have ranked ahead of Kobe, who is 9 on this list. So not a whole lot to argue about, really. I actually thought they did a great job. When this came out, I was fully expecting him to be in the mid to upper 20s, and I thought I could do a whole podcast on explaining why he was a top 20 player. But the things that they cite are 100%, you know, it makes sense. He won an MVP. He was Defensive Player of the Year. He won one title. He had the second longest career in NBA history, played 21 seasons, top 20 all time in blocks, top 20 all time in steals, top 10 in rebounds. I think he's 9th all time in rebounds. If you look at the win shares stat over at Basketball Reference, he's 9th all time. Of course, that's in some ways a volume stat. He played, as mentioned, you know, the second most seasons. He played 1,462 games, and he's just behind Dirk in win shares. Dirk actually played in 60 more games than Garnett, just ahead of Oscar Robertson in win shares, but Robertson played in 422 less games. So win shares is kind of a good, it gives you a good range. But some of these other counting stats, because of the length of Garnett's career, he's going to be in the top 10 or 20. But for a big man to be in the top 20 in career steals, there aren't very many of those guys. You look at the top steals all time, the only big man to have more steals than him, there's only a couple. Hakeem Olajuwon was 9th all time in steals. Karl Malone, actually 10th, are the only big men ahead of Kevin Garnett all time in steals. And that's just another underscoring, I guess, of just how good he was defensively and the impact that he had on the game. So actually, I thought ESPN did a really good job with this ranking, and kudos to them. All right, next up, we are going to get into some of the what-ifs from the Garnett era. Before we do that, I did want to talk again about our great friends at Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. I've talked about my experience with Built Bar the first time I tried it, and then also last weekend when my family and I went hiking, and it was a grueling 3-hour hike, and having a couple of Built Bars afterwards was perfect, not too filling, just the right amount. To this point, my favorite is still the chocolate almond coconut. Today, I'm going to have the raspberry chocolate cream. Have not had it yet, but that's the one that's next up on the docket. All the Built Bars are protein bars that taste exactly like a candy bar. There's 16 amazing flavors, 8 chocolate nut flavors, 8 chocolate nut-free flavors. They're covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew. They're perfect if you're health conscious, you're trying to lose weight, maintain weight, yet still indulge in a delicious treat that tastes like a candy bar, but does not have the nutrition, or I guess the lack of nutrition as a candy bar does. They're all low calorie, they're all low sugar, high protein, high fiber. The raspberry chocolate cream that I'll be having today is 110 calories, 15 grams protein, 6 grams of fiber, 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of fat in this bar. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code locked on. You'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code locked on for $10 off at builtbar.com. If you missed the episode with Jerry Zagoda, former Timberwolves beat writer with the Star Tribune, it was just yesterday. So go back and listen to that. We talked. So before that, I had talked the Ray Allen trade, the Joe Smith contract. Jerry and I covered some non-KG years things because he was not on the beat. He covered the team from their inaugural season in 89 through the Garnett draft in 95 and came back and covered the team basically right after Garnett left through 2018. So who knows, maybe the Wolves will enter another year or another period of time where they're consistently competitive right after Jerry leaves the beat. Wouldn't be surprising. He left, I think, right after the Wolves hired Rosas, or right before they hired Rosas, actually, because he left in 2018. So we talked about a lot of things in between, but I want to go back and talk about a couple of things that happened when Garnett was on the team. The first one, so we talked about the draft night trade of Ray Allen for Steph Marbury. I did not talk about the possibility of, or what would have happened had Stephon Marbury not wanted to be traded, and ultimately was traded for, the Wolves got back Terrell Brandon. That trade was was brought about by several different reasons, largely, and Jerry referenced this towards the end of our episode the other day, was Marbury just having greed for Garnett's extension that he was signing. And that was the primary reason. There were some rumors about him not wanting to play in Minnesota, and he spoke to that recently in the media. Marbury was on a podcast, I forget who it was with, but basically said that he wasn't psyched about living in the cold in Minnesota. And, you know, that's always given as a reason kind of generally, but nobody ever wants to put their name to it. And Marbury is now doing that many years later. But I would imagine that the top thing that irked him was the contract that Garnett was getting and the attention Garnett was getting as the lead dog on this team. Of course, there's no comparison. Garnett is, as we just talked about, the 20th best player of all time and was well on his way to doing that in the late 90s. He had already been an all-star a couple of times. Marbury had not to that point. And, never made an all-star team in a Minnesota uniform. This was only year three of his career. He'd only played two seasons with Minnesota. He did average, you know, almost 18 and 9 in his second year, and was a kind of a borderline all-star. Wasn't super efficient, wasn't a great defender, but formed that 1-2 punch to get the Wolves to the playoffs, you know, for the second straight year. He was only 20 too. So when he was 21 is when he started, you know, asking to be traded, and the rumbles were starting. He only played 18 games for the Wolves that year before he was traded, and was having another great year. The Wolves got back. This is a three-team deal that went down. This was actually the lockout season. So it was the back half of the lockout season, the 98-99 campaign. And the Wolves pulled this deal off right at the trade deadline. It was a three-team deal. And they sent out Chris Carr and Bill Curley to the New Jersey Nets. The Bucks traded Terrell Brandon to the Wolves. And then the Bucks traded some pieces to the Nets. The Wolves traded Paul Grant to the Bucks. And actually, somewhat ironically, Sam Cassell was one of the pieces that went from the Nets to the Bucks. So Cassell was part of the initial Marbury trade, going from the Nets to the Bucks. Brandon going from the Bucks to the Timberwolves, and Marbury from the Wolves to the Nets. So it was basically a three-way trade that was a little bit of a point guard musical chairs. Although everybody got a seat when this was all said and done. Terrell Brandon was a really good player for the Timberwolves, and as many of you probably know, the Wolves made the playoffs consistently every single year, the 2 years before Brandon came, and then that year forward, they were a playoff team. Brandon was right kind of on the back half of his prime. He had made a couple of all-star teams with the Cleveland Cavaliers a few years earlier in the mid-90s, and was a year and a half removed from an all-star season, was 28, and had a pretty good year the rest of the season with the Timberwolves. That Wolves team ended up going 25-25, but still making the playoffs. And they lost in the first round in a five-game series in four games to the eventual champion San Antonio Spurs. And then the next 2 years, Brandon was the Wolves' starting point guard. He averaged 17-9 the next year, shot 40% on threes, averaged 16.7.5 as a 30-year-old in 2000-2001. That was a 47-win team that lost in the first round to the Spurs once again. And then his final year, he struggled with injuries when he was 31 in 2001-2002. So his career ended extremely prematurely, and the Wolves basically just carried his contract at that point and traded it to the Hawks in 2003. So he was on the roster pretty much for almost 2 years without playing. He was part of that large Latrell Sprewell trade in the summer of 03, leading into the 03-04 season. So the Wolves were good with Brandon as their starting point guard. If you include the lockout year, they made the playoffs that year at 25-25. The next year they won 50 games, but lost in the first round. And then they won 47 games and lost in the first round. His first injury riddled year, they won 50 games again and were swept in the first round by the Dallas Mavericks. So, the Wolves were good under Terrell Brandon. There was a little bit of a ceiling based on what he could do offensively and what he couldn't do defensively. And at that point, he was right around 30 years old. So the big thing that happened with this trade was the Wolves traded out a guy with superstar potential and Steph Marbury for a guy who is on the back half of his prime and only really had at the time, and they didn't know this exactly, but he only had basically two and a half good years left in him. And Marbury went on to have a long career and became really less successful as his career went on, just kind of based on his playing style and the teams he played for. The teams that he was on were never all that successful. He went to New Jersey, and in 2 years, he was an all-star. Went to Phoenix, and in his second year there, he was an all-star. He was always kind of a average, you know, low 20 points a game, shoot 43-44% from the field. He was never a league average three-point shooter. And, you know, was a detriment in some ways to his teams, wasn't a good defender. And most of those teams that he played on were not all that impressive. That year when he made the All-Star team with the Nets, they won 26 games. They went 26-56. After the 27-win season, somehow the Nets were able to trade him in a deal for Jason Kidd to the Phoenix Suns. The very next year after they trade Steph Marbury, the Nets go all the way to the finals. They win 50 games in the regular season, 52 games in the regular season, go to the finals, get swept by the Lakers after swapping Steph Marbury for Jason Kidd, among other moves, but that's obviously the big one. In Phoenix, his first year in Phoenix, that team wins just 36 games. They go 36-46. Scott Skiles gets fired during the season. The following year, in 02-03, they win 44 games. Marbury makes it back to the All-Star game, and they get to the playoffs with 44 wins, losing six games to the San Antonio Spurs, and that's actually Stephon Marbury's last All-Star season. So he only made two All-Star teams. The following year, he gets traded again mid-season from a Phoenix team who started the year, 8-13, get another coach fired. They finished with just 29 wins. He gets traded and goes to the Knicks and spends the rest of his NBA career with the Knicks. And that went about as you probably remember it going. Not well. I mean, the Knicks haven't been good. And Marbury continued to get his 20 points a game, but their win totals 39, 33, 23, 33, 23 again. And then Marbury left to go to China. He did play briefly for the Boston Celtics in his final season in the NBA, actually. Again, somewhat ironically, reuniting with Kevin Garnett in the 08-09 season. This is the year after the Celtics won the title. So he played on the 62-win Celtics team in the playoffs. This team lost in the Eastern Conference semifinals in seven games to the Orlando Magic, Dwight Howard, in 2009. So Marbury did get a little cup of coffee with the Celtics. That was his only real true taste of success in the NBA. Otherwise, his best season was that 44-win campaign or 46-win campaign, I guess, in Phoenix when they made the playoffs and he was an All-Star. He only played in the playoffs five times in his career. Twice was in his first two seasons with the Timberwolves. Once was that aforementioned year in Phoenix, and once was a year when they squeaked into the playoffs with the Knicks and were swept in the first round. And then his last time was when he appeared in every playoff game off the bench, 12 minutes a game for the Boston Celtics in 2009, went over to play in China and has been an icon in China ever since. But what if he'd stayed in Minnesota? Does he reach a higher ceiling? Do things implode? Does Garnett get traded faster? Do things actually get worse if they don't move on from him sooner rather than later? Given what we know now about Marbury, it's hard to imagine how Marbury and Garnett would have been much better than Garnett and Terrell Brandon. Maybe there's a year they get out of the first round, but I can't imagine it ending well. Marbury was never in a place for more than 2.5 seasons until he spent 4.5 with the Knicks. And of course that wasn't successful. The only year they made the playoffs with the Knicks was the year when he wasn't with the team for the first half of the season. Marbury was moved on from after 2.5 seasons in every single stop until the Knicks. And there's a reason for that. So, interesting, fascinating what if. I tend to think it actually would have been worse had they not traded him, just given what we know about how the rest of his career unfolded. But interesting to look at from both angles. All right, we have one more, one and a half more what ifs to get to here related to the Garnett era, and that's coming up next. The broadest what if related to the Kevin Garnett era is, of course, if Kevin McHale and the Wolves front office and Flip Saunders really had done a better job of surrounding Garnett with talent. And if Garnett hadn't also been pretty obsessed with getting some of his buddies and friends to play around him, this team wasted a lot of Kevin Garnett's prime. And that's just kind of a very broad what if. There were lots of chances that they had to get guys. We talked about this a few episodes ago, and as part of a different series, there weren't very many free agent signings that the Timberwolves made during this era. And granted, Minnesota is not a destination free agent location, but with one of the top, I mean, Garnett was perennially, really for 3 to 5 years, he was a top 3 to 5 player in the NBA. And for the Wolves to not really land free agents during that period is shocking. Both Cassell and Sprewell were landed via trade while Zerbiak was drafted. Terrell Brandon was landed via trade. All the best teammates were landed via trade or draft. But the biggest kind of what if surrounding the best couple of Wolves teams in history, especially that 03-04 team, have to do with injuries. Wally Zerbiak had such a good start to his career. He had made an All-Star team already. And coming into the 03-04 season, there were a lot of concerns. I think it was both his foot and his knee. He was having, I think he had some plantar fasciitis issues, some heel issues, some foot issues. He had made an all-star team in his third year in the league, averaged just under 19 points a game, shot almost 51% from the field, 45.5% from three. That was in 01-02. And then the next year, after starting all 82 games 2 years in a row, in his fourth year in the league, age 25, he only played in 52 games and was clearly not quite himself, although he was still effective. In the Western Conference Finals season, 03-04, right after the Wolves acquired both Cassell and Sprewell, he plays in only 28 games, doesn't start any, averages 22 minutes a game off the bench for that team, only 10 points a game, still shot 43.5% from three, but simply wasn't himself, was not a high volume or high, he was still relatively efficient, but his field goal percentage to that point in his career over his first four seasons was over 50%. And that season in 28 games, he shot only 45% from the field. And in the playoffs, he missed a few games as well due to injury. Imagine if Wally Zerbe had been healthy that whole year, and perhaps he still comes off the bench. Maybe Trent Hassel's still in the starting lineup to add an element of defense, and maybe Zerbiak's kind of the de facto sixth man like he became when he was healthy in the playoffs. Does this team do better than, they were still the number one seed. And so, you know, what's the ceiling of this team? Instead of going 58-24, do they win an extra three or four games and, you know, win 60 plus in the playoffs? Are they more effective if he's entirely healthy? And while he did come back and play, he still only appeared in 12 games in the playoffs and, missed a handful of games here and there due to injury. If he's healthy, or if he's at least more healthy, how does that change the trajectory of this season? In the playoffs, he did actually average 12 points a game. He shot 42% from the field, but again, was not himself. The bigger injury that is, to me, I think along with the Steph Curry, non-Steph Curry, you know, not drafting Steph Curry and instead taking Johnny Flynn situation that we talked about with Jerry the other day, that one aside, I think the biggest what if in Wolves history is if Sam Cassell doesn't have his hip and back injury flare up in the 2004 playoffs. If that doesn't happen and it flared up during the semifinal series against the Sacramento Kings, the Wolves don't lose to the Lakers. They still took the Lakers to six games with Cassell not playing in the last couple of games of that series, being hobbled when he did play. There was one game where he came out early in the first quarter and didn't come back. The Wolves were essentially playing Kevin Garnett at point guard and Derek Barton playing spot minutes at point guard. And Sprewell didn't have a very good series either, and somehow the Wolves still took that Lakers team to six, and then the Lakers turned around and got handled by the Detroit Pistons in the NBA Finals. Sam Cassell recently had some comments, and Garnett wouldn't say this. There were some comments that Cassell made in an interview recently where he flat out said that he believes to this day that they would have won the NBA championship that year had he not gotten hurt. Garnett, of course, had a comment to the effect of, you know, not wanting to play what ifs. And that's fair, too. I mean, to go back, and I'm sure that would kill a guy like Garnett to go back and look at how if the second best player on that team doesn't get hurt, they win a championship. But it's entirely plausible that this team goes on to win the championship if Cassell doesn't get hurt. The Lakers weren't that great of a team. It was one of the worst Western Conference representatives in the finals, I think, in a long time. And the Pistons actually swept the Lakers that year in the NBA Finals. And I really don't think that certainly the Wolves would win that series against the Lakers, and they would not have gotten swept by the Pistons in the finals. Maybe they don't win it, but they for sure would have gone to the finals had Sam Cassell been healthy. And it's just fascinating to look back and see that. It apparently is urban legend that he hurt himself doing his celebratory quote unquote big balls dance early in that series. That apparently is urban legend. There's some argument as to whether or not that's true, but apparently Flip Saunders made that comment in jest. There's that rumor still out there. And no matter how he got hurt or how it got aggravated, the hip and back injury is part of the reason that the following season was not nearly as good for Cassell. And he ultimately was traded. Combination of injury and ineffectiveness. He was still effective, just less effective. And then also some contract issues. Got shipped off to the LA Clippers for Marko Jaric. And the Wolves also gave the Clippers a draft pick for their troubles too. In one of the worst moves in Timberwolves history. But if Cassell doesn't get hurt that year, I think we're absolutely talking about the only NBA Finals berth in Timberwolves history and possibly a championship. As it is, we have the only Western Conference Finals playoff berth, and not only that, the only two playoff series wins in franchise history were that same season. So unfortunately, that what-if is one of the ones that hurts the most. Next week, we're going to continue the what-if series. We are going to look specifically at the David Kahn era, and also as part of that, the Rick Adelman era, and some of those what ifs with the Ricky Rubio draft, as well as his tenure with the Wolves, the Kevin Love tenure with the Wolves. Some of the things we touched on with Jerry the other day, but then we'll also get into the more current era, the Tom Thibodeau era. There's just so many. I have an entire list of things we can tick off that easily could have gone one way or the other. Maybe a decision that I would have made differently, or really anybody would have made differently than a David Kahn or even a Tom Thibodeau in some cases. So we'll get deeply into that next week. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. A final special thanks to our friends at Built Bar for bringing us today's episode. Visit BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.